Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
Welcome back to Masters of Modern. I'm your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's up, everybody? How's it going?
Good.
Cool.
They can't talk to you.
Yeah, it's true. I guess that's true. I was just looking at cards, and I just was distracted because the new Chandra is so sweet.
It's really sweet.
It's so sweet.
So yeah, so today we're going to be talking about, speaking of Chandra, Kaladesh, and other things, PAX.
Yeah, PAX happened.
PAX West happened last weekend. The World Champion, yep.
There was a lot of Modern. You know, there's a really cool storyline happening going to Kaladesh. That's what I want to talk about today.
He doesn't want to talk about it. I actually don't fully know what this... I mean, like, I vaguely know. You know, I mean, paying attention to the story helps. We know that there's a Tezzeret, a new one coming down the line.
Yep.
If you pay attention to the story, which Ben doesn't. Kaladesh. I guess we can talk about that as soon as we tell people to follow us on Twitter. We're at the MMCast.
Oh, yeah. We're at the MMCast,
guys. I'm at Kess Wiley.
I'm at Ben Bateman Media, and this is our 99th episode.
Yes.
Of the podcast. We've got
99 episodes, and a 100th ain't one.
I would start remarking about how crazy it is to have done 99, except we're going to be doing that next week when we talk about the 100th, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So here's the deal. Before we get into anything else, for all you guys out there, this weekend, Saturday, the 10th,
yep,
we will be recording a extra long episode, live streaming it, hopefully with video if we can figure it out, from 1 p.m. Pacific Coast time this Saturday until we're done, counting down the top 100 cards in Modern history.
Yep.
So that will be us counting down 100 cards. It won't be a battle. We won't each have our own 100 list because that would be insane.
It's going to be a long stream with guests, and we're going to be doing... So it's the thing to distinguish here is that it's the top 100 cards in Modern history. So this is going to be sort of like...
It's not like the top 100 cards right now.
Well, yeah, it's like if you've ever looked at a list of the top 100 anything you're interested in, let's just compare it to sports because that's the easiest thing to classify. If you were going to look at, like, say, the top 100 NBA players of all time, that list would be comprised of guys that... had like won a lot, guys who are younger but were really impressive, maybe guys that had very short runs but then like got injured, maybe guys that got bit like blackballed from the sport. Point is, it's not supposed to just be things now, because there have been cards that have been banned that were good before. There were cards that were originally banned that have been unbanned and are now good. It's all about when
cards
things
that were unbanned and aren't good.
Yeah, it's all about, you know, the idea of things being significant and relevant in the competitive modern space
at some point, in a way that significantly affected the format.
The best example I can give, that, and you guys will experience this, is Treasure Cruise, which was an incredibly dominant card for one season, but didn't last more than a season. So that gets to be an impressive card, but not an impressive card in the context that just because on power level it would be like a top 10 modern card, it gets knocked way down. So that's kind of how we're going to break the 100 down. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to work very hard on the list. We've been honestly working on the list already the last week and a half, 2 weeks, like really trying to refine it so we have a really strong...
Yeah.
Strong idea. And
make sure, you know, go right now, you can go to our Twitch channel. That's officially the MMCast Twitch. So it's twitch.tv/TheMMCast, which is the same as everything else we have, like Twitter and Facebook and everything else. And go subscribe so you get alerted when we start broadcasting 1 p.m. this Saturday. That's
yeah.
1 p.m. this Saturday the 10th.
And you guys will hear our sister podcast mates on the podcast, hopefully.
Yeah.
Jimmy and Josh, who have a podcast of their own called The Command Zone. They are also on rocketjump.com currently. They do an awesome podcast. And then last but not least, we work with DMTW Clothing on their lifestyle brand. They make our products. They're awesome. We have this super, super cool playmat that's for sale. It's got our faces on it. We help design it. We think it's awesome, and those guys are great. So dmtwclothing.com. And if you guys want to help support the podcast in other ways, you can go to patreon.com/TheMMCast, where
Which
we have...
is how we're doing our live streamy thing. And,
yep.
And it's also the reason we're able to start posting videos on YouTube recently. So we're using the donations from Patreon, where we've been able to afford editing every week's episode into a video version, and you can go to our YouTube channel to find that.
We have an editor, Mike Clary, who's awesome, that does that stuff, and that is because of the Patreon. So if you guys want to keep helping the podcast, that's the way to help. It's really, really cool, and it's all described on there what we do. So let's get into the episode today, Kess. What do you want to start with?
I want to talk about pod racing.
Don't do that.
And by that, I mean vehicles and how sick they are on
Kaladesh.
Oh,
that's cool.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Go. So vehicles, guys. Vehicles are this thing that just got introduced in the Kaladesh spoilers. And as you guys know, if you listen to the show, we like to do... we like to do a full set review episode where we do like our top 10s.
Generally after we get our hands on the cards.
But before that, we often will do kind of like a preview episode.
So today we're going to talk about the different mechanics. We're going to talk about some of the cards, you know, spoiled in the first weekend.
Yeah.
How we feel about the set, where we think it might be going.
So there's a lot of stuff. First, should we talk about energy counters?
No, I think vehicles. I just brought it up.
Oh, you want to talk about vehicles first?
Yeah.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
I was there.
So vehicles are this thing,
guys. All
I
want to talk about.
It's like, and there may be some of you who don't remember that there was a time when, you know, equipment was not a thing. There was a time when planeswalkers weren't a thing. Like they introduced these new mechanics, and sometimes they seem kind of crazy. And the vehicles.
So do we think vehicle? Well, first, okay. The way vehicles work is they're an artifact that comes into play. It has a power and toughness, but ignore that for now. And then it has an ability called crew, and then it has a number. And what that basically is you can tap any number of creatures. You have to tap the amount of creatures equal to how big its crew cost is, and that will animate the vehicle to attack.
You continue to be incorrect.
Read it out loud. I'm wrong.
It's the number. It'll say crew 2 or crew 3. What it is you have to tap creatures whose combined power equal at least that number. So if you have crew 1 and you have a 1-1, you can tap that 1-1, and it'll power crew. If it's crew 3 and you have a 2-1 and a 1-1, you have to tap both of them to equal 3, the power of the crew. That's what's necessary, correct?
Sure.
Okay. Just making sure, because it seems like we don't agree on this, even though it's written clearly in front of us. If you want to keep goading me into...
Whoa, shots fired. All right, so...
Kessler was wrong about
vehicles
how
are
on the podcast.
That's true.
And
it was
called out about it.
They're sick.
Goad?
Do you think... No. Goad's kind of lame. But these...
Yeah.
I'm really hyped about vehicles. Do you think they're going to be evergreen? You kind of led that with equipment and planeswalkers.
Those became evergreen. I guess they started evergreen. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, equipment just became evergreen and planeswalkers.
Yeah, it's true.
Just became evergreen.
This seems kind of like a specific plane type of deal, like having tons of vehicles lying around. I could see this being something that exists on different planes because I think the idea of having a vehicle, it's not like a vehicle has to be an artifact on an artifact world. It could be an artifact on any world.
Yeah, I mean, like, look at Geistcatcher Rig on Innistrad, or
yeah,
you know, every plane has some type of thing that steeds drag around.
Yeah, so I think that's definitely a thing. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if it became it. I guess it looks like we have Sky Sovereign Console Flagship. That's the one we've gotten so far. That's mythic. Costs 5. It's a 6/5 flying legendary artifact vehicle.
So I will say one thing. For how... Oh, you read the rest of the card.
Whenever Sky Sovereign Console Flagship enters the battlefield or attacks, it deals 3 damage to target creature or planeswalker an opponent controls, and it has crew 3. It's pretty sweet. It's pretty beefy.
I mean, based on what we've seen so far, and there could be one that's printed that's just bonkers and great, I would be surprised if vehicles make any type of big splash in Modern.
They don't... Yeah, well, they haven't shown us any yet that have cheap enough cost to high enough upside that you could imagine actually throwing them in.
Right. And that's not to say that this mechanic doesn't have that possibility, but sometimes I have to separate my I love Magic, and this is a Modern podcast, so we're designating cards. This is the coolest mechanic in the set to me, but it has nothing to do with its playability in Modern.
Yeah.
Because so far I can't imagine a world where they would push one for Modern, but maybe they will, and that'd be awesome, because then I get to ride my vehicles into the sunset.
I mean,
Modern.
I guess there is something to be said for like, Sky Sovereign Console Flagship. Like, not to say that that's going to necessarily be a Modern card, but the thing that's cool about these vehicles is that you get to play them, and then if you have a creature in play already, you get to then just tap the creature to essentially give the vehicle haste.
No, other way around. The vehicle needs to have haste. If you can have this just in play, and then when you play a creature, the vehicle essentially gives that creature
haste,
the ability to have haste, because it can then crew the ship without having to...
Right, but if you have a creature already in play and you play the Sky Sovereign...
Artifacts still have summoning sickness if they become creatures.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you 100% on that?
I am 100% on that.
You read the ruling on this already?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
That's how all permanents work. That's why some of them have haste. Like, one of these things wouldn't have the ability haste if it didn't need it.
Oh, got it. Okay. Yeah, you're right. Interesting.
That's
sort of confusing to me, but I guess it makes sense.
Well, it's like man lands. If you can't man land to come into play untapped.
Yeah.
They can't just attack.
I know. It's just weird, the idea of a vehicle.
If you animate anything with Tezzeret.
Yeah.
Agent of Bolas's minus that just came into play, it can't attack.
No. I mean, I think from a ruling standpoint, what you're saying makes sense. I think the reason I'm confused is that from a flavor standpoint, when you're trying to like sort of imagine the way that one of these things works, it's like equipment doesn't need haste because it's like a thing that somebody that's living gets
to
use.
Well, look at the other way. Yes.
It's the same with the vehicle.
But that's part of the rules working the way they do. But on the reverse end, this works like a vehicle because if you just have a dude, vehicles let it have haste.
Yeah.
You can be summoning sick and still drive. I've gotten off an airplane from Hong Kong, super jet lagged and driven a car before.
So moving on to some of the other things we've seen, crew is pretty cool.
I don't recommend doing that.
I haven't seen any crew things that like blew my mind yet. We've seen.
So that's the first one. What's the next? The next mechanic is energy. Let's talk energy because that's the other super complicated one.
So there's this new thing called energy, and it's a symbol that we haven't had this like thing in Magic. It's like, it's one of those weird things where it's like a new thing on a card. It's weird actually to have crew and an energy symbol in the same set because they both feel sort of like, do you know what I mean? They feel different. They're actually new. It's not like a continuation of something we've seen, the evolution of something we've seen.
Either one of them could be the breaking the mold, double face-esque, like we're trying something new mechanic of a different set, and they're doing both in the same set.
Yeah, so like, let's see here. Here is a Voltaic Brawler. It's a 1 red, 1 green creature human warrior. It's a 3/2. It says when Voltaic Brawler enters the battlefield, you get 2 energy counters, and they're symbolized by a little lightning bolt inside of a pentagon-looking thing.
Yeah, kind of looks like a star.
Kind of looks like a star. When Voltaic Brawler attacks, you may pay 1 energy. If you do, it gets +1/+1 and gains trample until another turn. It's a cool idea, right? The idea of having sort of like an artifact world or like a world with many, many cool artifacts.
Well, so Mauro kind of posted in this article earlier this week, but basically, he designed this for original Mirrodin. This is one of the mechanics he came out for that. And that's where charge counters came from.
Yeah.
And the original idea for charge counters was that all of the different charge counter artifacts could access the other charge counter artifacts. But then when he passed it over to development, like, there's a lot here. We need to cut some stuff back. So he was like, oh, I'm going to save this for another set because this is a cool idea. And put it in his back pocket. He tried making it work in Alara Block. It was, I think, one of the first tries at being the Esper mechanic.
Right.
But back when that was also like colored artifacts were their thing, and that was too much. So they kind of held back on that. So now we're here. And this is the third artifact plane we've been to basically since.
Yeah. It's cool. It is cool, right? That when you play a thing, you get the 2 energy counters, and then if the thing dies, you just still have the energy counters for the next artifact that you get that uses them. I think that's interesting, and that should be a lot of fun to play with.
I do think this, of the different mechanics, this is the one I think has the highest chance of seeing play in Modern.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a little disappointed, as I usually am, when I feel like it, when design feels a little parasitic, which is.
Well, the card you just read, the red-green one, like, completely fine on its own. A 3/2.
Yep.
Is it a 3/2 when it comes to play or a 2/1? I can't. It's a 3/2 as Ben hits the microphone.
Yeah. I was symboling while I drank water. And
a 3/2 that essentially is a 4/3 for 2 turns, and then it loses its counters unless you can kind of refill it with another one. Because that's what's cool is they also work together really well.
Yeah.
Like what they've done is every single one kind of works with itself, and then just if you have more of them, they do extra good things with each other. And I think that's an interesting way to do a parasitic mechanic versus something that like requires like processors versus ingestors
were
so inherently like one does not work without the other.
Yeah.
These are or like one doesn't work unless you really set it up. These function insularly and then just get extra beefy when you play with another one.
Yeah, it's nice. I mean, it's nice that you can play with multiples. It's the kind of thing that the second time they go back to this plane or that they use this mechanic, it will make all of these cards more interesting and fun. Mm-hmm. And we'll have fun with them, but it's going to be hard for something like this to work well in Modern. That's the thing.
I think a 4/3 for 2 is like pretty Modern playable.
Yeah, no, that's good. What I'm trying to say is that I think, generally speaking, the reason like whenever Block Constructed used to come around as a competitive format, the reason it was so frustrating is like these cards are all designed to function with each other. So the best version of this it can't be that powerful because it has to be designed to work within Standard. Standard can't be that powerful.
Mm-hmm.
You expand it to Standard, it's kind of the same idea. The reason that Modern is so interesting is because you can combine something weird with something else weird and old, and redundancy starts to exist when you have similar designs and similar mechanics, which is what creates, I think, such kind of cool Brewer's Paradise type of decks. So that's something like this is really fun the first time. It's always more fun the second time, but it's nice that something like Voltaic Brawler is a good card on its own. And I like the way that energy plays within all the cards.
You still get Proliferate, and there's still older mechanics that do function a little bit with this. It's just none of those have been extraordinarily pushed, partly because of Planeswalkers. Because energy, if I were to compare it to anything, is very similar to loyalty counters.
Yeah.
And they've been very careful to make it so loyalty counters aren't breakable.
Yeah, do you kind of wish, in some ways, that Proliferate had been brought back in the set? I think it would have been fun.
I would like Proliferate to be brought back.
Yeah, for sure.
This set is a place to do it. There, I mean, yeah.
Maybe it comes back in the second set. Yeah, who knows?
I mean, Tezzeret's coming back, and he feels like he was the... He has nothing to do with Proliferate, but he was...
Really?
A blue...
I thought he did. I thought...
Oh, no. Yeah, he does.
He totally does.
His card draw spell is a Phyrexian mana,
yeah.
2 or 3, draw Proliferate,
called,
and draw 2 cards.
It's Tezzeret's Gambit.
Yes. So, yeah, he's Proliferated. Sweet. Yeah. So the last new mechanic is, like, a very much... This just feels like a more like a the development team kind of built it. It's the
Fabricate
where it's whatever Fabricate X and X is either you get that many Thopt or tokens or you get that many +1/+1 counters on the creature.
Right.
Which is like they've done this a bunch of times. It's definitely going to be good. There's like anytime you have a choice with a versatility ability, you're going to have a card that is theoretically very constructive playable if they print it at the right stats.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Fabricate seems just generally good. Like, you have Cultivator of the Blades here. Green, 3, Elf Artificer. It's a 1-1, Fabricate 2. When this creature enters the battlefield, put 2+1+ counters on it, or create 2-1-1 colorless Servo artifact creature tokens. And then it also has, whenever Cultivator of Blades attacks, you may have other attacking creatures get +S/+X until end of turn, where X is Cultivator of the Blades' power. So it's kind of an interesting... like sort of tenuous design idea there, right? That you can put, it seems fine. I mean, this seems very simple. If they're +1/+1 counters or they're creatures, it works well with both Proliferate and Populate, which is fun. It seems cool. You get to create artifacts for things like Metalcraft and Affinity.
And that's the last word that they added this time. And this one is for sure Evergreen.
Yeah.
Create. So we no longer... put a token in the battlefield. We create tokens.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's kind of like how dies used to be enters the graveyard.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
You literally said it as it's now meant to be used 3 times in a sentence just because you naturally already do it. Like, no one's going to notice the difference. They could have not announced and we would all be fine.
Yeah, I didn't even notice the difference. So those are the 3 new mechanics. I think of the 3 of them, I think my favorite is the second one.
Energy? Really?
No, maybe not, actually. Maybe Crew is cooler. Crew is definitely cooler. It's gonna, I guess.
Vehicles
gonna,
are a sicker.
Yeah, it's gonna be. I guess, but I haven't seen any vehicle yet that I've been like blown away by.
True, so. I agree. I 100% love vehicles more for them being vehicles.
Yeah,
this is something I posted this on Twitter as soon as vehicles were spoiled. It's surprising how much I love fictional cars and vehicles, or just vehicles in general. So X-wings, these.
Right.
Vehicles in general, and hate cars, and hate like real world airplanes. Like, I could not have a conversation with a person about their car, but I will talk to them about the difference between an X-wing and a B-wing for like 2 hours.
And then there's also A-wings.
Yeah.
And then am I missing one? Or those are the 3?
There's a Y-wing.
There's a Y-wing.
There's those are the ones in the original movies. Yeah. Yeah. There's now a U-wing. The new Rogue One's gonna have a U-wing in it.
Cool.
Yeah.
U-wing, like the New York Knicks, Patrick U-wing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly like that.
Let's move on. So other things that they have just thrown out, a couple things that we'll talk about further in the actual set review. But
Dwarf Tribal?
Dwarf Tribal is a thing.
Sweet.
Yeah.
I'm glad dwarves are back.
We have enemy-colored Fastlands, which is something we've been... Didn't we call that? Didn't we predict that like several weeks ago? I swear we predicted that like several weeks ago.
We might have.
We were literally talking about like design space. Like, I think probably the cycle we'll see is the enemy-colored Fastlands. And I was like, yeah, I totally agree with you. That's probably what's going to happen.
Twitter, let us know. Did we say that a couple weeks ago?
I think we did. They have premiered... the Planeswalker decks, Planeswalkers, which are like these weird sort of like underpowered.
So basically what they decided is for the beginner product, they like were so centered around Planeswalkers, but the Planeswalkers were never included and impossible to get. And they want these Planeswalkers to be a bigger face of Magic.
Right.
As we've noticed with the Gatewatch, that they are now printing really, 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 really bad Planeswalkers.
Low power level.
Yeah. Bad is a strong word. That like our standard legal, modern legal, we could play with these Planeswalkers once this set comes out. We never will.
Because there's a Chandra and a Nissa, but they've also now previewed the real Chandra and the real Nissa in the set.
Do you know that there has never been a set that Nissa showed up in that Chandra wasn't also in that same set?
I didn't know that. We will specifically talk about each of the cards later. There's a three drop Izzet Planeswalker called Saheeli Ray, which is very cool.
She might be the best card so far spoiled for Modern.
She's really good. I like her a lot.
Things I want to do with her in Sun Titan.
Chandra, Touch of Defiance is the big story.
Might be the best card in the set.
That's the big story. She's really good. We will talk about all of that in our set review, though. We don't need to go into specific cards, I don't think, quite yet.
Sure.
If we do want to talk about Chandra maybe for a second, because there was a lot of conversation about it.
Four mana Planeswalkers are good.
Yeah, when I read this card and I think about...
Four ability Planeswalkers.
Four mana, four ability. When I read this card and I look at what it does, it feels a lot like Jace the Mind Sculptor to me. Like, it doesn't feel powerful in the same way, but it definitely feels like this card is really good. It might be way better than it even looks. And this could end up being like a huge powerhouse.
Yeah, it traded the ability to lock your opponent out of the game for a mana-producing ability.
Yeah, it ends up having sort of a similar ability to Garrick 1, to Garrick Wildspeaker.
Yeah.
In the sense that you get to play it as a 4-drop on 4 loyalty. I think Garrick was a 3 loyalty, if I remember correctly, right? I think he was, because it was -1, make a 3/3, and you could do it 3 times.
Garrick came in as a 4 at 3. You can plus to make him at 4, and you can alt at 4.
You can alt at 4.
But
yeah. Yeah, so this is a +1 for add 2 red. Comes down to 5.
It might be 4 to 5. I mean, yeah, okay.
It also has a +1 to exile the top card of your library. You may cast that card. If not, it ends up dealing 2 damage to your opponent. It has a -3 of 4 damage to target creature, and a -7 with when you cast a spell, deals 5 damage to creature player, you get an emblem that says that. So it's really good. Like, I tend to really, really, really like that first Garrick +2 untap 2 lands ability, because you can use that obviously with acceleration lands, but the great thing about it is, like, if you like to build decks that have low curves and a lot of really, like, cute and cantrip-y and efficient spells, 2 mana is just the right amount of mana to be able to play a 4-drop and still do something to protect it.
Well, I think the fact that she comes into play and can kill anything, not anything, but a lot of things in the format,
yeah,
is really good. I think the fact that she can come in and start being a threat is really good. I think the fact that she can come in and start drawing you cards, because she really has 5 abilities.
Yeah.
Because the +1 where you draw a card or do 2 damage is 2 abilities on the same Planeswalker ability.
Super
good. Like, she's really a 5 ability Planeswalker, which is bonkers.
Totally.
It was bonkers.
I think Chandra's really sweet. There's a lot of other cool cards in the set. I think we should probably save most of them for our set review.
Sure.
But that's kind of what we've seen so far that's been exciting. Somebody pointed out the card Pia Nalar, which is going to be fun to talk about that. We'll get to talk about that a little. Is Kieran Nalar going to be the set as well?
He died.
Oh, so he will not be in the
Spoiler
set.
Spoiler alert. But yeah, he died. In the Magic Origin story, like, he dies, and you, like, on camera see him explode, and then you, like... She, like, Chandra as a child runs to her family home or the refugee home their parents were staying in, and it was on fire, and she's like, oh, my mom's dead, and then she gets captured, and then they try killing her in a coliseum or something. But
she survives.
She planeswalks. That's how she got her spark. Da, 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 da. There's a card called Chandra...
Sweet.
Something.
Sick.
The creature one that kind of tells that story. But, yeah, so she's alive, apparently.
So that is what we're going to talk about today with Kaladesh.
Yeah, well, what's your thoughts on the, like, whole plane itself? I know you don't love story that much, but, like, the flavor of a cool like a happy artifact land.
It's like Lurwin and Mirrodin combo.
Well, basically. Yeah, yeah. it's what people have actually what Wizards were describing it was steampunk.
Yeah,
it was aetherpunk, so it was like happy versions of steampunk.
It seems fine to me. They're the happy planes. I tend to look back on, like, less favorably. Like, Lorwyn and Morningtide, the design is, like, kind of lame in my opinion. It's just not my favorite.
Okay.
But the thing is, it's... And
what about, like, Ravnica, though?
Ravnica's awesome.
I would say Ravnica's a happy plane.
But Ravnica is, like, no, it's City of Guilds. It has, like, dark alleys and brokers and, like, all kinds of cool stuff.
Oh, but this has things.
Yeah, no, agreed. I'm just saying, like, in general. But I wouldn't have necessarily called Kaladesh like a Lorwyn type plane. And I also love artifacts. Like, artifacts are historically my favorite part of the game. So the fact that there is a 3-mana is it Planeswalker in the set is really, really cool to me. The fact that, like...
And she's, like, very good.
Yeah, and the fact that that Chandra's great. I really like that there's so many cool artifacts. I like energy counters. I just think that's...
Yeah.
I think, like I said, when they bring those back a second time, that's going to be a very fun thing to play with in Modern. Yeah, I like it.
I do think that this set might be the best set for Planeswalkers in the modern since Origins, I guess, but really ever. Because
that Nissa is no joke, by the way. It's a 5-drop, yeah. But it's really good.
I like the fact that on turn 4 you can play Chandra, and then on turn 5 you can play Nissa and Liliana.
Yeah.
In the same turn, because you can buy back Liliana in your graveyard.
Yep. All right.
That's
moving on.
Buying it back. All right. So World Championship.
Brian Brondeau
won. 1 day of Standard, 1 day of Limited, and 1 day of Modern, which makes it exceptionally relevant to.
Yeah,
us.
The day is mixed together a little bit. It's like Standard and Draft. 1 day, I think it's Modern and Draft, though I'm not quite sure. I watched bits and pieces, and then I've now watched some of the coverage of the matches. I watched JC Tao playing against Brian Brondeau in, like, I think like the semis or something like that. Bant Eldrazi is what Brian was playing, and he ended up winning the tournament with that deck.
Yeah,
JC was playing Black White Tokens, which was like a pretty interesting deck choice, I thought. There was some pretty cool stuff. We can talk deck lists a little bit. I guess we'll start with Bant Eldrazi just because it's the winning deck. Watching the matches, something that became very clear to me, and we had talked a lot during the banning episode, the post-banning Eye of Ugin episode, about the power of mana creatures with the Eldrazi.
Yeah.
Because we had said if you play a turn one bird or Hierarch, and then you play a turn two Eldrazi Temple, you can still get turn two Thoughtnotseer, which is
very good.
Really good. And that's even without Eye of Ugin, like you're still able to get turn two Thoughtnotseer. So that's interesting. That happened a bit. The card that blew me away the most, though, because in the third game, Brondeau ends up actually coming back in a game that really looks like he's done against JC by top decking Reality Smasher. And Reality Smasher's so good. But I would say Smasher's amazing. The best card in his deck appeared to be Eldrazi Displacer, though.
Yeah, Eldrazi Displacer is nuts. That's why that's the reason you're playing white in that deck pretty much exclusively, because that card is very, very, very good.
Yeah, like that card's great when against tokens. I felt so bad for JC. I was like, oh my god, the timely reinforcements should have just like totally put you back in it. And then like Brondeau's just like draw Eldrazi Temple, gives me the right math to be able to blink two of your tokens next turn, blink your other token, play Reality Smasher. Like you just lose.
Yeah,
it's just rough.
Yeah, yeah. That deck's the real deal. The what's interesting about the World Championship for Modern specifically is because it's a, you know, like in the Pro Tour, it was already weighted where because Draft was so influential on how your record did, being the best deck in the format did not, or being the player that had the best record did not mean you had the best Modern deck necessarily.
Right.
This is compounded. So the fact that that's three different events that they go through, and Modern is kind of the last ones that they end up playing, means that, you know, how well your deck does versus how legitimate it is in the format is not the same as a random modern GP or a random modern FNM.
Right.
With that said, I do think that's one of the reasons a lot of the decks in this top that these players chose were a lot of probably what their safe choices were. They walked in this tournament thinking, all right, I have Standard that I have to beat, and I have to be really good at Eldritch Moon Draft, and I have Modern to deal with.
Yeah.
Of those three, I've played Modern the most. The deck that I had picked for Modern, the format has changed the least since I started playing, you know, in the last year.
Yep.
And so I'm just going to play the deck that I've been jamming for, like, make sure it's a good metagame choice, make sure my deck's not dead, make sure I do some testing with it. But pretty much all of them have picked decks that, like, they were comfortable with.
Right. Well, I mean, we can talk. So let's talk quickly about the actual metagame breakdown. We'll talk about some of the other specific decks as well, but
provided by Wizards of the Coast at dailymtg.com.
Yeah, so there were 8 Abzan decks, and out of 24 players, obviously. So there's only 24 players, but it's 24 of the best players in the world. 8 Abzan decks, 2 Jund decks, 2 Bant Eldrazi, 2 Living End, 2 Titan Shift, which is a newer deck we've talked about a little bit, 1 Scape Shift, 1 Affinity, 1 Infect, 1 Dredge, 1 Abzan Company, 1 White Black Tokens, 1 Goryeo's Vengeance, and 1 Thing Ascension, which is the Thing in the Ice Pyromancer Ascension deck that Ryoshi Tamada played at that Grand Prix we talked about, I think just last week. He was in the top 24 with the same deck. So,
which is sweet.
It's super sweet.
It's so sick.
Yeah, right? It's like not even playing Snapcasters, right? It's playing 4 Thing in the Ice, 4 Pyromancer Ascension, and all the spells.
Yeah, all the spells.
And that's how it wins.
4 Metamorphos. Yeah, that deck is awesome.
Yeah. So
pick it up, people, unless something gets banned. Why would we get banned of that? Nothing.
Yeah, so that was
that's
pretty...
the deck to say it that's picked up. And it's probably cheap, too.
Reasonably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, move on.
So that's like pretty cool. You definitely had some pretty interesting decks in there. I think some of the ones that stuck out to me as most interesting would be black-white tokens that JC Tao was playing. That may be the most interesting deck in the top eight, only because it's such an unexpected choice. Things that he was playing in that deck that I thought were really cool were he was playing four Asylum Visitor in the sideboard.
They're like just very good in the grindy matchup.
Yeah, his thing was that he really liked playing Liliana of the Veil in this deck as opposed to Spectral Procession. He wanted to play a more disruptive game plan. So if you're going to play Lilianas, then bringing in Asylum Visitors in the grindier matches are great.
Ooh, passing the turn to a player with Liliana in play with no creatures in play and having a Asylum Visitor in your hand and having her plus and getting the Madness your own seems really sick too.
Yeah, right?
Against just Jund decks. Okay.
Seems awesome. Yeah. That card's just super sweet.
Yeah, yeah.
I would love that card for a while.
I do think that's a card that'll see play more in Modern as people pick it up. Like, this is kind of how it starts. Someone played it, did pretty decently, and then just kind of roll over and do a little bit more as time goes on.
A few of the other decks, we've talked a lot about Goro's Vengeance. There was one Dredge deck. We've talked a bit about that, Abzan Company. There was only one true Abzan Company with the infinite stuff.
The Malera combo version?
Yeah, and that was Shouta Yasuka, who's very good, classically a very good Magic player. There was one Affinity, one Infect, and then you start to get into single Scape Shift, a couple copies of Titan Shift.
I do want to talk about Titan Shift. So I think that after this and after the Triple GP weekend, we can very much cement Titan Shift as a pillar of the format, almost.
Well, you were saying that it reminds you a lot more of those old school Valaka decks when Valaka was in Standard, right?
Yeah, so like, you know, forever, and that's what kind of there was a rug/Bring to Light Scapeshift deck that also was in the top 24, or these 24 decks. Like, that's kind of the classic version of the Modern version of this, where it's counter Magic, I'm more of a control deck, tempo deck that's just trying to get to enough lands, because a control deck is trying to do that anyways, so that I can play Scapeshift and win with counter Magic up. The Titan Shift decks play a lot more similar to Valakut and Standard, which was much more about playing Kalini Heart Expedition, playing as many ramp spells, playing creature ramp spells until you can get a Primeval Titan into play, or in this case, Scapeshift as your backup plan, and then just start beating face with the fact that Valakut, you have a bunch of mountains and playing Valakut comes in. Like, you can theoretically dome someone for 9 if you untap with a Primal, or sorry, 12 if you untap with a Primeval Titan.
Yeah, it also has elements to the deck. So you're talking about the old Valakut decks. It also has elements to the Scapeshift decks that were so popular. Those rug ones you're talking about with the counter Magic, where you would play against them and you would be unclear if somebody was going, I'm going straight Scapeshift, right? And then sometimes the sideboard plan would be that they would bring in like 6 or 8 beefy threats against
Inferno Titans, or against Liliana of the Veil, you bring in Obstinate Baloth.
Yeah, and that was a thing that you would have to worry sometimes that those decks were going to do. This is kind of like an accelerated version of the sideboard plan. They'd have Thragtusks and Primeval Titans in the sideboard.
Yeah, you cut blue, so you make your mana a little bit better.
Yeah.
Because you're no longer trying to play Scapeshift, Cryptic Command, and have, you know, the 11 mountains you need in a deck for this deck to function. It's definitely really interesting. I think that obviously this deck did really well last week, and it was one of the best performing decks of the Triple GP weekend.
Yeah.
And in this format, I mean, once again, it shows its face as one of the few decks that had more than 2 copies in the top 24.
Yeah.
Or in the 24.
100%. So
Jun's there. Jun will always be there.
Yeah.
Infect's there. Like, all these are decks that people kind of are classically known to play. So we've been talking about this, and this has been a little bit more on Twitter, and last week we were all about diversity in the format, and we were a little bit defending it, and then Twitter I started kind of going from the other perspective. Yes, this format is a little bit more mid-rangey and control-y than what the format looked at the GP weekend.
Right.
But that's why I want to temper that with, these are pros who spent most of their energy getting good at draft and Standard for this event. They got good at Modern, and they definitely practiced for it.
Reed Duke and Brad Nelson both said they played Jund because, like, I was like, we can't change who we are. Like, it's a deck we know. There's 8 other pros that played Abzan decks. You play those fair decks that you know how to navigate the field. It's like, I mean, that's why you had 10 out of 24 playing traditional mid-range decks. Some of the things that we talked about the Triple GB weekend are becoming much more stock now. So you had Grim Flayer showing up as a 3-of in a lot of both the Abzan and the Jund decks. You had... One of the things that we thought was so cool, we kept talking about last week, Collective Brutality, showing up as a 2-of in the main deck in a lot of these decks. For those of you that don't remember, is the Escalate, discard a card, 2-drop sorcery with the 3 abilities of making them discard an instant or sorcery, -2/-2 on a creature, or draining a creature for draining an opponent for two life.
Yeah. And then, you know, people are now playing the new Liliana as a one of to accompany their three or four other Lilianas. So it's either your fourth or fifth Liliana of the Veil.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, it's a good Liliana. It has a slightly different ability. It has a targeted ability, which is nice.
What's cool about it is it's good against the decks that Liliana of the Veil is bad against.
Yep.
Where it can start picking away X1s and things that are going wide, while Liliana of the Veil has normally problems if people have, you know, three Lingering Souls tokens in play.
Yeah, one of the big reactions was that we ended up with two copies of Living End in the top 24, which Living End tends to just be that deck that it sort of flutters in and out of being competitive. It just disappears for a long time.
It's an amazing metagame choice here.
Yeah.
The fact that whenever the people that came up with the Living End choice were like, you know what? Pros are going to be playing the decks they're comfortable with, or they're going to be playing, you know, there's a lot of really good creature decks right now, and Living End gives me a instant speed board wipe that also is great against these grindy decks, and like very, very smart to kind of play that into this format.
Right.
Other than the Scapeshift decks, I guess it has a terrible Scapeshift matchup.
Yeah, it's bad against Scapeshift. So yeah, I mean, that's, and you had obviously Bantle Drazi we mentioned already. And that pretty much wraps up the metagame. When you got to the top four, we'll just quickly talk about those top four deck lists, the guys that really made the biggest impact. Let me just... So
while you find that, I do want to go on looking at Modern Diversity and looking what the format could use and be unbanned or banned or whatever, because we are moving towards that ban announcement. And because next week we're doing our 100th episode, we'll probably get a ban restricted announcement before... the next episode that we have nothing to talk about, that we have to come up with something. And then even then, I think we're doing our set review. Been a lot of arguments on Twitter. I started with a statement.
Surprising for you.
We should ban Become Immense and unban Stoneforge Mystic, Jace, Jitay, Preordain, Punishing Fire, and Bloodbraid Elf.
You're nuts.
That was partly the spark discussion, see where it went. I have been whittled down through arguments and good points all around to Preordain,
Stoneforge Mystic.
Stoneforge Mystic, Bloodbraid Elf.
Those are the three.
Those are the three cards that I think should be banned. And they all have different reasons. I think Bloodbraid Elf took a hit. I think with the new Chandra, that it's not even an obvious answer. I don't even think that's correct for that to be your 4-drop anymore.
Right.
If you're playing Jund. On top of that, Kalidus is also like very good against Dredge and very good against Abzan Company. Like, you have to be very aggressive to make Bloodbraid Elf the correct choice there. Even going into Colligan's Command, that's like good with Affinity being good, but I don't think that's great. Preordain is the new one because we've talked about Stoneforge Mystic, and I'd recommend going back to the episode. We have an entire episode about Stoneforge Mystic being unbanned. Preordain, though, is new. That's the big one. Looking into it, I think Serum Visions makes the format more aggressive. I think Serum Visions is bad on turn 5,
okay,
but great on turn 1. So it encourages your deck, if you're trying to use Serum Visions, to play cards that let you win capitalizing on your Serum Visions as early as possible.
And you're saying that you think it would be better to have Preordain in the format with Serum Visions?
I think there's an argument to be made that having all 8 could make decks like Storm a little bit better. Mind you, Storm hasn't placed in a long time, so Storm getting a couple shots in the arm isn't a terrible thing. And worst case scenario, Wizards bans Grape Shot. But Preordain would allow decks like Blue-White or Blue-White-Red or other kind of more control-y decks to be able to find the answers they need in their sideboard to be able to fight off some of these linear decks that are so diverse. Because one of the problems in Modern right now could be argued that it's really hard to be able to fight Affinity and Dredge and Infect.
I mean, so if you're going to say Sleight of Hand would, in theory, allow those decks to do this exact same thing in a little bit less good way, but it would allow
a much worse way.
I'm not going to say that it's in a much worse way, because if the point is to be looking through two cards, to be digging two cards, putting something into your hand and digging for a card, like, it's certainly not as good as Preordain, don't get me wrong. But if decks were going to do that, I think they could just load up on that cantrip, and they haven't. That's not a very played card. I think Preordain would definitely increase the potency of something like Storm. Would it factor in as a 6th, 7th, and 8th copy of Serum Visions? Would people play Preordain over Serum Visions? Would that be the 4 of?
I do. Well, do you think Serum Visions or Preordain is better as a card?
Preordain.
So, yes, I think Preordain becomes adopted over Serum Visions more often than not. But giving people the ability to, because like the problem with Serum Visions is turn six, it's terrible.
Right.
Because you're like, oh, I draw a random card and I set up and I lose. Where Preordain gives you ability, which is what's important, to do that late game. But Preordain is also good turn one, where that's where Sleight of Hand kind of loses its oomph.
Hmm. I personally don't think we need Preordain in the format. I don't think it makes the format
But do you think a card should be banned if it doesn't deserve? It's not powerful enough to be banned.
I guess it was banned in a different time.
It was also banned alongside
Ponder.
Ponder at the exact same time with Splinter Twin in the format. Like,
that's what I was saying. It was banned when the format was in a different place. I mean, yeah. Splinter Twin being legal is the biggest one. I'm trying to think what the next best combo deck that would use eight cantrips to dig that would be. Like,
maybe Ad Nauseam decks, like Life's Finale, or not Life's Finale, Angel's Grace. Angel's Grace? Yeah. You don't die this
yeah.
turn. Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, it might. It what
I think it
also
does more to diversify the format. And yes, but most of these combo decks that people have problems with aren't blue, and blue would make them worse. Like, blue is not good right now.
Would it make like decks that people have tried building? There are so many fringy combo decks that have existed in Modern over the years.
There's always going to be like, that's good. Give them a chance.
Do you think that playing, giving them four more really good cantrips in their decks? Okay, take a deck like, this is a weird example, but take a deck like the Jace Architect of Thought Doubling Season deck. Like, take that deck and be like, okay, so if you give that eight cantrips, does that make that deck like just like
you're gonna... saying that's a bad version? Like, I would love to live in a modern world where that deck was viable.
I just mean like things that are really backbreakingly powerful on turns four and five and giving you eight ways to get there instead of really four. I mean, maybe not. You might be right. I just think
it's still, you say it all the time, it's still playing eight, four, and five drops in their deck. Like, the issue you run in more to is, but look at the other side. Now I have a better chance of finding my Stony Silence on turn three. Or turn two. Now I have a better chance at finding my, Ancient Grudge. Now I have a better chance of finding my Rest in Peace.
I feel
so I don't have to play, my graveyard slots are so strained.
My feeling on Preordain is that I really like where the format is. I like the role that Serum Visions plays. And I think Serum Visions is enough for the decks that want an effect like that, that I think for them to unban a card they had previously banned, not really feeling like they needed to add something to the format, and then if they found that it was too powerful having to ban it again or ban Serum Visions, would be foolish. That's why I don't think it's necessary to do.
But almost every other card they've banned has been fine, and I don't think Preordain is more powerful than some of the other cards they've unbanned.
Right.
And on top of that, I think the format needs a better way of finding answers.
Okay.
And I don't think Preordain's that much powerful than Serum Visions, but it does lead to a more late game focused deck being better than what Serum Visions currently allows.
Right.
All right. So what are the top four decks from the World Championship?
World Championship top four decks. So you have Brian Rundoon playing a Bant Eldrazi deck. It is pretty much what we have come to expect. It's not really all that crazy. You have his... Wait, that's his standard deck. Oh, I wish Tamio Field Researcher was in the modern deck. Deck is so... Card is so sweet. Scrolling down, try to get this to load on me. Here we go. Okay, he in modern. So it's pretty much what we have come to expect. It's playing four Noble Hierarch. He is not playing the one Birds of Paradise. It is four Reality Smasher, four Eldrazi Displacer, four Thoughtnut Seer, three Matter Shaper, two Eldrazi Skyspawner, three Drowner of Hope, one Spellskite, four Ancient Stirrings, two Dismember, four Path to Exile, and one Engineered Explosives, and 24 lands.
And I do want to point out the Skyspawner, because that, once again, is a card that like I think people would overlook as a card that would be good, but
yeah,
it's so important against A, Affinity and Infect.
Yeah.
Which, you know, the Black-White Tokens deck, when you read the update on it, like they're like, we're playing these cards partly because it's good against Affinity and Infect, because it can block those flyers, and this can do that. And
yeah,
slightly better, because it can block something that has X2 power, so it can block an Ornithopter profitably. And beyond that, the ramp on it gets you to be able to cast, say you draw the wrong lands, or just cast some of your big beefy cards a turn earlier.
Brondoon is playing two copies of Elspeth Sun's Champion in the sideboard. He said that's good against the grindier decks like the Abzans and stuff.
I think Elspeth Sun's Champion is really good.
Yeah,
cards. To the extent that like if I was Jund, I'd start really considering running one Dreadbore over a Terminate.
Hmm.
Partly also because of just in general Delirium, because there are now reasons to play Delirium with your the flares.
Traverse the Ovenwald. Oh, yeah, flares.
But beyond that, I think it's just getting rid of planeswalkers, especially with the new Chandra possibly in our future.
Yeah.
And the blue-red planeswalker is going to become more and more important.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we talked about it a little bit before.
Fire Dreadbores now. It's going up.
We talked about it a little bit before, but Eldrazi Displacer is just nuts. And it's funny because that card doesn't look that nuts when you look at it. It just looks like good, but it's nuts in this deck. It's just good being able to blink things, and it's also really good if you need to slow down your opponent and make them not be able to attack you.
It's pretty good with Thought Knots here just by itself, but like just being able to stop your opponent from doing anything is like a decent ability. And it's a 3-3 for 3.
Yeah, and also like you have it, your Eldrazi land is like your soul land. Makes that ability cheaper, which is sweet. So that's really good. Moving on to the next deck, you have Marcio Carvalho, who was the guy that lost in the finals to Brian Bronduin, and he was playing a Grimflayer Abzan deck. He has the two copies of Collective Brutality, which is really cool. He has a 3-3 split on Inquisition Thoughtseize, 4 Lingering Souls and a Maelstrom Pulse, 2 Abrupt Decay, 4 Path to Exile, 3 of Liliana of the Veil, 1 Liliana of the Last Hope, 1 Engineered Explosives, and then his creature suite is 3 Grimflayer, 3 Ooze, 4 Goyf, 2 Tassigar.
Again, I gotta like Grimflayer is just showing up more and more in these Jund and Abzan lists. That like you really need to like keep an eye on this card.
3 Shambling Vent, is that common? Did I miss that?
In Abzan, theoretically, if you're more black than you were green than before, like if you want to be able,
I guess that must be a thing. I always thought that there was a little bit of a split on the Shambling Vents and the Stirring Wildwoods.
I mean, Shambling Vent seems generally very good. Compared to Stirring Wildwoods, I mean, it's like a better, like I'd rather beginning life than just having reach, but
gets bolted though. So 2-3.
Sure.
Interesting. So that is that deck. Sideboard stuff. 1 Elspeth Sun's Champion in his sideboard. 3 Damnation. Another Collective Brutality. Nothing else. Another Liliana of the Last Hope. So 2 between the main and the side. That's cool.
Yeah.
Let's move on to Oliver Chu. This is the Titan Shift deck we were talking about.
Yep.
We went over this list pretty extensively already. Colony Heart Expeditions.
I think the one interesting thing to talk about Colony Heart Expedition is the fact that I think Abrupt Decays are seeing less play. And it makes sense. The format has gone away from what Splinter Twin used to force it to be.
Yep.
So there's more 4-drops. They're less game-winning if you can't kill it. There's less counter magic, so it's better to play cards like Terminate because that hits more things in general. Which makes Cleaning Heart Expedition more playable because you no longer just get blown out by an Abrupt Decay.
Yeah. Yeah, we've covered this list pretty extensively. It has 2 Anger of the Gods in the main deck. 2 Summoner's Pact is another cool part of it. And the sideboard is I think we went over this list pretty much last week. So
next we'll
go over the last deck, and that is Abzan Company, played by Shota Yosuka. This is a very stock company list.
There's a good conversation. Like, Company can't change very easily.
Yeah,
that's true. It's one of those decks that like you have a few, you have to have this many cards of this many card, and then you have like 3 slots to be able to really be creative with.
Yeah.
And how much better are they? Your choice is going to be than the previous deck, and that's metagame choice, but for the most part, it's pretty stock because you just have to have it be.
I guess the one thing in here that's cool is the 2 copies of Anafenza the Foremost in the main deck. I like that card a lot. It's actually a card that has surprised me to have not seen more consistent modern play.
It's seen more play because of Dredge. Dredge became such a big powerhouse in the last 3 months that she's become more standard in the list.
Because those of you who don't know what it is a...
So she's really good with Kitchen Finks.
Yeah. It's black, green, and white for a legendary creature human soldier 4/4. Whenever Anafenza the Foremost attacks, put a +1/+1 counter on another target tapped creature you control. If a creature card would be put into an opponent's graveyard from anywhere, exile it instead. It's a 4/4 for 3 with a super sweet ability that works really, really well with Persist and is also provides graveyard hate. Like, it's very good.
Yeah.
Especially if you're playing...
Great in the mirror, too.
You're playing 4 birds, 4 Hierarch on this list. Like, you can hit that on turn 2 in this deck with remarkable consistency. So that's really good. That, otherwise, is pretty much...
Yeah, those are the top 4. I think this... It does show that, you know, these mid-range decks, these collected company decks, which it's interesting because... There's definitely a difference between Bant Eldrazi and Collected Company, Coco, like that, the Abzan Company decks, and Jund and Junk decks or Abzan regular decks. And both of them are mid range, but one is much more of an aggressive mid range, and the other one is more of a controlling mid range. But when it comes down to it, we're once again some mid-range decks and a bunch of linear combo decks and looking for an interesting way to kind of defeat the format.
Yeah. So, guys, that pretty much wraps up the episode today. I think we covered everything that was super interesting to us at PAX.
Egypt. Egypt land. Did we mention that?
No.
Do you know that? That's what's happening?
The Egypt
land? The set after this one is Egypt themed and Bolas is like a god king of an Egypt land.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's where we're going after this.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I missed that.
Yeah, yeah. Egypt, there's rumor that there'll be five gods.
Huh.
I think one of the announcements mentions that there are five gods. We don't know if there'll be gods like before, there'll be fake gods, but Nicol Bolas is like subjugated five gods on, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
There'll be pyramids.
And Bolas. Sphinxes. We got a new version of Bolas. Yeah,
Nicol Bolas. Bolas is back after like almost 9 years.
Do you think he'll cost like eight again or something? Nine?
I have no idea. I have no idea what we're going to get from Bolas.
What's the cheapest they could make Bolas cost and still justify it within story?
Seven.
You can't be less than that.
Can't be less than seven.
Because he's too powerful.
Yeah. Seven is kind of the mana cost of this is no longer regularly a thing you cast.
What if he went to Egypt and he like somehow was able to like siphon off his power to these five gods to make them powerful, but he was worshipped?
Well, so I feel like it's the other way. I feel like he's like taking power from the gods.
I know. I'm just trying to imagine some way that we'd get like a 3-man Nicol Bolas.
No, if anything, I'd say we're getting like a 10-mana Nicol Bolas. I think we go up before we go down.
3-mana Grixis Nicol Bolas?
Not happening.
That would be a time travel plane, and it would go back. It would be like Time Spiral 2, and it would be like young Bolas.
Like a baby Bolas. Young, even then, like there are no dragons that are 3-mana.
Be like a young man Bolas. Young demon.
It would still be like a 5-drop.
I still wouldn't play it. Anyway, guys, that does it. Thank you so much for listening to the episode. Thank you for listening to episode 99. The next time you hear from us, that'll be episode 100. And on top of that, you guys are going to get our super sweet preview card from Kaladesh that we're going to be premiering.
So that's next week. So the way it's going to work is we do our 100 episode countdown stream on Saturday.
Yep.
Then that episode we will record live at 1 o'clock. Sneakily record our preview card and attach it to the front of the episode the following week on a Tuesday. So you'll be able to see Wednesday. You'll be able. No, it comes out Monday.
Yep.
The 12th, whatever the 12th is. On the 12th, the episode will be released with our spoiler card attached to the front of it. It's going to be sick. Get ready.
Boomtown.
1 Check p.m. on Saturday, Pacific Coast time.
Yep. Tune in 1 p.m. Pacific Coast time. That's going to be twitch.com/TheMMcast.
Twitch.tv/TheMMcast.
There you go. Twitch.tv/TheMMcast. And of course, follow us on Twitter, guys. I'm Ben Bateman Media. That's Kes Wiley, and we are at TheMMcast on Twitter. Check out The Command Zone, our awesome sister podcast by Jimmy and Josh. They are on RocketJump.com. We are on Patreon at TheMMcast. You can help support us so we can do this. It would be awesome if you do, because that's how we stream things. We buy extra equipment and stuff like that. And of course, we work with DMTW Clothing, who's an incredible lifestyle brand that helps us make great product. We have a playmat for sale on dmtwclothing.com. Check it out. Thanks for listening to the episode, guys. And I can't wait to premiere the top 100 cards in modern history for you. We'll see you on Saturday.
Bye, guys.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to the mmcast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.